From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 158 of Little Brother for the 16th of January, 2025. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can leave a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. I've talked before about how your car and your cell phone know an awful lot about you and can share it easily with organizations that you have no interest in sharing it with. Well, it turns out that some less obvious devices might be doing something like that too. Would you believe your exercise bike and your treadmill? Obviously, these devices know a lot about you. They know something of your exercise habits. Maybe they've got an app that calculates something useful for you, so it might have persuaded you to tell it your height and your weight and your dietary habits. Well, Consumer Reports has recently done an investigation into the topic, and they learned that while the data these devices send to their makers for them to sell to data brokers is probably not particularly worrying in and of itself, it is concerning that the disease of monetizing every single data point goes this far. Cyber defense contractor PeopleTech have developed some guidelines for the application of makeup. Why makeup, you ask? Well, put simply, these guidelines are good for thwarting facial recognition. The results are published in a white paper titled Novel AI Camera Camouflage, Face Cloaking Without Full Disguise, and I will include a link to the paper in the program notes. Lastly, in its efforts to ruthlessly cut pretty much everything out of the federal government, the Trump administration has terminated the advisory committees that report to the Department of Homeland Security. This may not sound like a big deal, but amongst other things, this means that cybersecurity reviews are now not happening. This, in turn, means that we are opening the government to cyber attacks, at a time when such attacks are increasingly coming from government-aligned threat actors. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. I want to talk a little bit about a problem that has become big enough in recent weeks that I want to encourage everyone to do something about it. And it's not that hard to solve. The problem has shown up a lot lately in the chat groups that I participate in and on Reddit, and it is this. Someone sees something interesting, they post it. It might be an article, might be a post on social media, they post a link to it, and by the time others see their post, poof! It's gone. Then there are a couple of other problems. One is that the link may contain tracking information or otherwise compromise the privacy of the participants. Clicking the link may establish a relationship to the person who posted it, or it may give information away about you or your device to a third party that you have no interest in sharing it with. A perfect example, one individual posted a link to an article that they had basically given everybody a guest access to. And when you clicked on the link, a pop-up says, here is this person's name, has shared this article with you. And it was the real first and last name, not their screen name. Another is that the content may come from a provider that you don't wish to support with advertising dollars. The solution to all of this is actually stunningly simple. When you do grab content from a site to share and repost, take a copy. If the content is a picture, just simply save the image locally and then post it. If it's video, you could use a tool like YTDLP or NewPipe or Video Download Helper to grab the video content and to repost it to the platform that you're sharing it on. On the other hand, if the content is just a document of some sort, maybe an article or something along those lines, you can use your browser's print functionality to convert the document into a PDF. Now, this may prove more difficult if you're using an app to access the service. However, using a desktop or a laptop computer will easily produce a PDF. On mobile, if you decline the app, as I do, for instance, for Reddit, Firefox, Brave, and Chrome all support printing, at least on Android, and it can be found under the browser's share menu. So, this is your opportunity to protect the privacy of your companions, to protect the content that you want to share from disappearing, and to subvert the surveillance system all in one fell swoop. What's not to like? Well, this episode is a lot later than it was supposed to be, so we've got kind of a pileup of things. I have a bunch of privacy-related news, so let's hit it. We'll start with a couple of bits of good news. Now, you may recall that in the last episode, and yes, I know it was 5 weeks ago, but in the last episode, I interviewed Alex Marthews of Restore the Fourth, and we discussed what is often called the 702 backdoor. This is a legal structure that government agencies have been using for a while now to get access to data from data brokers as a way to step around needing to get a warrant. The gist is, data brokers don't need a warrant to gather data because you have unwittingly given them permission by agreeing to the end-user license agreements for the apps and software that you use. The data brokers put that information up for sale, and to the data brokers, law enforcement is just another customer looking to buy data from them. Well, Alex had been talking about a legislative solution to this problem in our interview, but between then and now, a federal court, a federal district court in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, has ruled that this is unconstitutional. More critically, this came out of a criminal case, United States versus Hajbajrami, and it implies that the prosecution may have lost the use of some of their evidence, as is the norm for handling Fourth Amendment violations. In other news, General Motors and its OnStar subsidiary are no longer allowed to sell your location data, at least not for the next 5 years. Now, this was a part of a settlement of a case that was brought by the Federal Trade Commission against GM in response to consumer complaints about their data being sold, for instance, to their insurance companies, as I've talked about here a number of times. While I personally believe that the ban should be permanent and it should be applied to all automakers and to others, let's say phone makers, this is a good step. Now, I'm glad that it is at least 5 years because the FTC is unlikely to be much help for the next four or so. Speaking of cars, security researcher Sam Curry has discovered that Subaru vehicles can be tracked and controlled via the Starlink administration panel. Working with fellow researcher Shubham Shah, they were able to determine and to produce a proof of concept that with only a little information about the car owner, you could remotely stop, lock, unlock, start, and retrieve the location of any vehicle, retrieve its entire location history to 5-meter accuracy over the last year, retrieve personally identifiable information about the car owner, and so on. He has a detailed write-up of the exploit, and it should scare the shit out of you. It can be read at samcurry.net, and I'll include a link to that in the program notes. Well, how about this? The state of Texas did something right. Attorney General Ken Paxton has brought suit against Allstate Insurance for using data collected by apps like GasBuddy to track clients' movements and driving habits. The suit is brought under the state's new Data Privacy and Security Act. Meanwhile, another lawsuit, a class action suit in San Francisco, is going after Amazon for using their Amazon Ads SDK to track users of, well, pretty much any app that used the SDK. For those not familiar with SDKs, that stands for Software Development Kit, and it's a bundle of code and services that is offered to software developers so that they don't need to reinvent the wheel. In this case, the SDK provided an easy-to-use method for app developers to include advertisements and get a share of the advertising revenue in their apps. The suit was brought by Felix Kolotinsky of San Mateo, who learned that he was being tracked via the Speed Test by Ookla app. By the way, that app just got uninstalled from my phone right this moment. Anyway, let's finish up on one other thing. I have often told people that sharing information about whether or not you own a gun or any other weapon and what those weapons might be is a bad idea on the grounds that keeping this information to yourself retains the element of surprise, prevents you from being a target for theft, and so on. Some folks, for instance, might view the phrase "come and take it" as an actual invitation to come and take it. Anyway, now you have another reason to keep this information under your hat. It seems like Cambridge Analytica have been studying the dataset for political gains. I repeat, this is none of their fucking business. A question came up on a group chat that I'm in, and I thought it was important enough to share here. In a nutshell, the person asking the question wanted to know if there is a secure, private alternative to Zoom. The use case he had was that he wanted to help support a group of activists who are non-technical. And not to beat around the bush, if all you want is the answer to that, Signal Private Messenger and Jitsi Meet are the best two choices. Honestly, if your activist group isn't already using Signal anyway, then you should be. Here's an excerpt from the last episode where my guest Alex Matthews of Restore the Fourth explained why in a pretty compact way.
One conversation I'm engaging with other civil liberties advocacy people is trying to encourage them when they're having video calls and strategy calls to switch that environment over to Signal, because we are literally doing organizing against government surveillance. Why would we not organize using a platform that is not going to be able to give metadata when faced with a subpoena? We don't want our opponents to be able to straightforwardly map our networks.
Okay, so just use Signal, all right? And maybe have Jitsi as your backup choice. We good so far? Good. All right, so I told you that so I could tell you something else that you need to be mindful of at all times. What I said in the chat was, even if the platform is secure, and understand me, Signal is about as good as it gets. Even if the platform is secure, it only takes one mole to scotch any plans you may have. When you are holding your organizing meetings, you need to keep them to the smallest number of people possible and make sure that you can trust all of them with whatever information you share. Now, sometimes that doesn't matter. If you're just planning an announcement, Say, for instance, that you're wanting people to converge on a particular place at a certain time to protest something, well, then it probably doesn't matter. But if you want to discuss strategy or tactics, you need to keep the conversation among people that you trust directly. Now, I don't want you to get paranoid. What I do want you to do is learn to be safe. If you're planning any kind of act of civil disobedience, you should absolutely make sure that the fewest people possible are aware of it until it happens, and make absolutely certain that you can trust those who do. To borrow from one of the political commentators that I listen to, you can't change the world for the better if you are inside a jail cell or looking like Swiss cheese. Be safe out there. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Our first fail today goes to Stellantis. Now, for some reason, some of you may not know that name, so I'll just fill you in. That's the parent company of several different car makers worldwide, specifically Opel, Citroën, DS Automobile, Peugeot, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram Trucks, Vauxhall, Abarth, Alfa Romeo, Fiat, Lancia, and Maserati. So, massive transnational automaker. Great. So what's the fail? User experience. They have failed on user experience. The very thing that the automakers sell is user experience, and on this they have failed. You see, when you are driving, you need, and I absolutely emphasize in every possible way that I mean you literally, potentially, life and death require with absolute certainty, you need that every display, knob, button, wheel, pedal, lever, switch, indicator, or other variety of interface object found in the automobile that you are driving is going to do exactly the thing that you need it to do, only the thing that you need it to do, and to do it exactly when you need it to do it. And so it is with profound horror, on levels more than I care to recount right at this moment, that Stellantis seems to think that they should serve ads to you on your car's touchscreen. Yes, the touchscreen, the very same touchscreen that I have been railing against even existing. The one that, once we get past the idea that it shouldn't exist, which it shouldn't, should be displaying only helpful and useful information, such as a map or a view of the car's surroundings. That touchscreen, once they've got you used to looking at it for information, they're going to block that view, however temporarily, to show you an ad on your car that you own, that you paid for by your own means, that is not theirs because it is yours. No, just fucking no. Not that I was considering one of their vehicles, but I am considering them even less now. Over on Blue Sky, Leslie Carhart has made an interesting observation about things going on at the National Security Administration, or NSA. This is the agency that Edward Snowden blew the whistle on years ago. Well, it turns out that with the current culture war thing going on in the U.S. government, complete waste of time and government resources, where the new administration is sifting through documents looking for anything that could possibly be related to DEI One of the terms that they are looking through agency documents for is privilege. So, if you run an organization or an agency or whatever that has a bunch of documents on how to hack things, as I would expect to be the case with the NSA, you better believe that somewhere the phrase privilege escalation appears. Now, I'm not sure if these guys are doing the purge are just ripping documents out of circulation for matching their search criteria, or if they're actually vetting the results, but based on the fact that it's run by a bunch of tech bros who seem to believe that every problem can be solved by technology, I'm gonna wager that there's no vetting going on. Now, I have no love of the NSA, but I know that that sentiment is not universal. But now, how about a fail that you really want to see fail? How about a little schadenfreude? A little bit of sweet, sweet karma. One that most importantly, I think we can all agree on. Well, it turns out we all hate robocalls, especially the scammy ones who ignore the do not call list because, you know, they're not legit businesses anyway, and try to persuade us that they are from your TV provider. That's a quote, your TV provider. I'm calling from your TV provider. Try to persuade you that they are from your TV provider, your cell phone provider, or, and this is an exact quote from one I got, the U.S. Department of Government. Let that one sink in for a second. Well, some of them recently got their comeuppance when earlier this month, they attempted to perpetrate a scam by posing as the Federal Communications Commission's fraud prevention team in a scam that ultimately attempts to get you to purchase and send gift cards to the scammers. It is worth noting that the FCC does not have a fraud prevention team. Fraud is not their mission. It did, however, prevent some fraud when this call landed on the phone of an FCC staffer. The FCC took the problem to the scammer's telecom provider. They proposed a fine of a hair over $4.5 million against Telnix for failing to verify the customer's identities. Telnix is defending against the fine by pointing to a very quick shutdown of the customer. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fogaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Azriel, Julie Bernstein, Joe Cadillac, Frog Butts, Fogaboo, Ed, Thriller at Play, Snackness, and Brute Trash Can for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 159 will drop on the 2nd of March, 2025. Stay safe and be well.
thing!